Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
What's happening in Washington and how it affects you? Melissa in the Morning welcomes Congressman Jim Himes to WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm doing fine. Thank you.
So I have a lot of mostly questions about reaction, like your reaction. What are your thoughts on it? I have to be honest. That's most of the questions I got from listeners. You cool with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I assume we're talking about the hearing last night.
So that is one of the questions. That is actually one of the questions. And actually, our own Lisa Wexler wanted to let you know or remind you. I'm not sure if you knew, but she did recently get a Connecticut Press Award for her interview with you the day after the attack happened. And she did like a 30-minute interview with you about your reaction and everything. And she just wanted to remind you that she got an award on it. And if you've heard it, if you've heard it back. So interestingly enough, kind of the timing of it, she was like, let him know. I said, I will.
Yeah, yeah, no, I know. It was quite an interview, and yeah, I was very happy for Lisa. And you know, to answer your question, I'll tell you, it was personally very painful. You know, I was, as you know, in the chamber and actually one of the last out of the chamber, so there was, you know, an hour there where I thought, you know, how does this end, and do I come out the other side of this? And you know, I think it's important for the American people, right, to see the intensity of what happened. Time tends to dull sharp edges, and I think it's important for people to see how violent it was when, you know, hundreds of Americans decided to attack and ultimately kill a number of police officers and in the service of a lie. And this was one of the more powerful moments last night when you hear Donald Trump's own people, his attorney general, his daughter, say that they knew that he had lost the election. And to this day, the ex-president himself maintains that he did not. And but really, what worries me most is not how I felt or my memories of that day, Melissa. It's the fact that, you know, over time, an awful lot of people have sought to say, oh, it was just tourists going through the Capitol or people exercising their legitimate free speech or, you know, or the fact that, you know, polling shows that some, and I don't think this is true in Connecticut, but nationally some 60% of Republicans still think that Donald Trump won. And I don't get angry about that from a partisan point of view. I get angry at that as somebody who wants our country to remain a democracy. Mm. And if a good chunk of a major political party can't believe what is, you know, clearly true. We heard that from Attorney General Bill Barr, no friend of Democrats last night. We have a fundamental weakness in our democracy. And at the end of the day, that's probably what sort of breaks my heart most at this moment in time.
Mm. I think as a so I'm an unaffiliated voter. And I think that's been one of the saddest things I've seen in the past couple of presidential I'd say presidential leadership. I know a lot of it did start from the transition from Barack Obama to President Trump, from the former President Trump. And I think that's one of the hardest things, too, that I found as a reporter and an unaffiliated voter is it's very difficult to even have conversations when you don't fully agree either with your party. And that's not just for Republicans. It could be on both sides as well. But I agree. I think it's really challenging that we live in a world where conspiracy is sometimes bigger than fact. I'm not saying at all, but in a lot of situations. Yep. So I agree with what you're saying. You know, I think that's hard. That's hard.
Yeah, and it reminds me too. I mean, let's set aside, as you might imagine, having been there that day, and like so many Americans, watching with horror last night. As you might imagine, I have pretty strong feelings about ex-President Trump. But let's pull back from that. And you know, I was also reminded, to your point, to precisely your point, that set aside who's president, we've gotten to a place, and I see this every day, where the other side are communists or fascists or Nazis or they're traitors or they want to destroy our nation. Melissa, there's a reason I don't use that language ever, because every time an elected official, whether it's the dog catcher in Easton or the president of the United States, uses that language, one more brick is removed from the peaceful democracy that we have generally been. And we move that much closer to a world where we have the kind of political violence that one of the great inheritances of being an American is that we have always thought happened in other countries, not in our own. And so, you know, there's a lesson for all of us here, regardless of what you think of Donald Trump or Democrats or Republican, which is if you're using that kind of language, if you think with that people with different ideas are traitors or seditious or Nazis or communists, you are not bearing the burden that, and I do mean burden, of being a citizen in the world's greatest democracy. You are spitting in the face of the legacy of being a member of the greatest nation the world has ever known, because you're helping to erode that democracy. And so I think there's a lesson for all of us here, which is we got to remember that a difference of opinion is actually the strength of our system, not something to be, you know, attacked with violent language and imagery.
I agree with you. And Congressman Himes, if I may kind of second that, I don't want it to feel like it's only, and I don't think you're saying that. I think you're saying that's to everybody, regardless of their political views. But I think, you know, I do think Republicans, even if they liked Donald Trump as a leader, they may not have agreed with the way he spoke or agreed with a lot of his actions, but they liked him as a leader. I think to the same token, it's really not fair to call people bigots or that they're closed-minded or that they don't care because they voted for Donald Trump. I think that's also something that should be said.
Absolutely. Look, we got to stop calling people things, period,
yeah,
right? What we need to do is focus on actions, right? I mean, do people do bigoted things? Of course they do. And you know what? You and me and everybody else, when somebody acts in a racist manner, we ought to notice it because, you know, Americans of color deserve all of us standing up against racism. But to call an individual permanently a racist or whatever it may be, that's another way in which we erode our democracy, right? Let's focus on specific actions, specific ideas, and, you know, and be precise in the way we talk about things. That'll help us.
Mm-hmm. Congressman Himes, one more question for you. So we had a couple of calls yesterday. I know one in particular, his name was John. I don't know what town he's from, but he had asked about protecting Supreme Court justices. Of course, as you know, earlier this week, an armed man was arrested because he showed up to Justice Kavanaugh's home and was charged with planning to murder Justice Kavanaugh. Of course, this comes as we are waiting for a major decision on abortion rights here in the United States. What do you think about that? And what are we doing to better protect our justices, regardless of which way they lean?
Yeah, I would say two things to that, Melissa. Number one, obviously, we need to protect all public officials. Speaking as somebody whose life may have been momentarily in danger in January 6th, I can tell you I speak from the heart when I say that. And that applies, obviously, again, to all public officials, Supreme Court justices, you know, presidents, members of Congress, dog catchers in Easton, right? And you know, we should be very clear about this, which is, and I hope this has come through in what I've said this morning, violence against anybody or threats of violence against anybody is not okay. Now, it is different when an idiot shows up in front of Kavanaugh's house relative to what we saw happen in the Capitol of January 6th. Let's not say that those are the same thing, because we need to keep our ability to be discerning. But we also need to say, and this is one of the things that drives me crazy about watching cable news, you know, just because there's lunatics on the left, and there are, my colleague Steve Scalise, very senior Republican, was nearly killed by some idiotic lunatic who had Bernie Sanders on his mind when Steve and his Republican friends were practicing baseball for the congressional baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
I should never hold that up, or the right should never hold that up as saying, well, look, both sides do it. Well, okay. It doesn't matter. This is not a side thing. In this country, violence is not how we solve things. And if you engage or threaten violence, you are going to jail. And I don't care what party affiliation or where you are on the political spectrum. It's back to what I was saying earlier, Melissa. If that's not something we all can embrace, we're in a lot of trouble in this country.
Congressman Himes, I really appreciate you coming on this morning. I had one more question for you, but I know we've run out of time. So maybe if you want to sideline it, it has to do with the PGA suspending the 17 golfers. I mean, do you have a minute to stick around? I would love to get your perspective on that, if you don't mind.
Sure. I'm not sure I've got anything smart to say, but that never stopped me before.
Okay. So, Congressman Himes, the PGA Tour has suspended 17 players, including six-time major winner Phil Mickelson, as well as a top golfer, Dustin Johnson, after they teed off at a controversial tournament that is backed by Saudi Arabia. This is the LIV, the LIV Golf Series, which is in its inaugural event, and it's promising very big bucks for the golfers who are involved in it. So, of course, this comes down to a question of, is it okay to be a golfer collecting money and putting politics, putting your country, putting everything aside because you're doing a job at the end of the day? You have to do a job. Or does this put patriotism on the line? Are you not being a good American because you are getting involved with countries who outrightly hate us and have done bad by us?
Yeah, I guess, Melissa, and as I said 2 minutes ago, I'm not sure I've got anything smart to say on this, but here goes. You know, number one, this always comes up, right, because most of our professional sports are monopolies of sorts, right? We see this with NCAA and, you know, can student athletes get paid for what they do? And does NCAA get to tell them that and everything? We see it with the NFL and, of course, with Major League Baseball as well. So I do think there's a conversation to be had about, you know, these monopolies and who has what authority and who has how much power. Now, my understanding is that guys like Phil Mickelson are getting paid $200 million to do this. So you know what? I'm not really crying all that many tears for these guys. Your second question, though, I guess my second point, yeah, you know, now it's not so much really, you know, I'm not sure Saudi Arabia hates us. You know, what I'm concerned about more is that, you know, the Saudi regime has done some pretty awful things. And I guess, you know, it's not my job as an elected official to tell Phil Mickelson what to do. But I would hope that whether it's the NBA in China, you know, and the Chinese, of course, are basically using slave labor in the western provinces of China. I guess it's just I would hope. And again, it's not my job to be a priest or a judge, but I would hope that, you know, Americans would remember that we're Americans because we're rooted in a set of values, and that as you make commercial decisions, you always keep the notion of what our national values are in mind as you make a decision as to who you're going to rub elbows with abroad. But again, I'll leave it there because, you know, I have a public role, and that public role is not necessarily to be a moral judge of people like Phil Mickelson or the NBA.
Fair enough. Well, I appreciate your comments. Congressman Himes, thanks for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Melissa. Take care.
All right. Here we go. Some big health news. For the first time, a drug targeting a protein that drives breast cancer growth has been shown to work against tumors with very low levels of the protein. The drug is called Enhertu, I believe is how you pronounce it. Enhertu. And I wanted to learn more about this. So this morning we are joined by Dr. Sandy Donzol, who is the oncologist with the Cancer Institute at St. Vincent's Medical Center. Good morning. First of all, Doc, thank you for being here. Am I saying your last name correctly?
Yes. Thank you for having me, Melissa.
No problem. So tell us a little bit more about this drug. How does it work?
Well, this is actually very exciting. Oncology in general, we're moving more towards targeted therapies, targeting tumors more precisely to, you know, lower impact on toxicity on the body. This drug is actually an antibody kind of conjugate drug where an antibody takes a chemotherapy payload, which is carrying along with it, directly to a HER2-positive breast cancer cell and targets for cytotoxic cell kill. So we're very excited because it offers more directed therapy than general chemotherapy.
Now, I just want to clarify for listeners, Dr. Donzol, is this a cancer treatment, or is this a, and when I mean treatment, I mean, is it going to cure your cancer, or is it something that prolongs your life or makes it easier to battle cancer? Like, what would you define this drug as?
So this treatment is going to be considered palliative. It's not curative, but it's to help control cancer in patients who are actually heavily pretreated. And it's very exciting because we haven't had a niche for this group of patients with HER2-low breast cancer in the past. So we're very excited about this development and about future drug development in this particular slot.
Do a lot of people typically get this type of breast cancer? Like, who would benefit from this specifically?
So this particular drug is studied right now in this trial in patients who have advanced stage 4 breast cancer.
Wow.
They can be estrogen expressing or non-estrogen expressing, but they have to have the HER2 protein expressed in a low amount, either 1 or 2 with a FISH negative result. Prior studies had where we have used this drug are in patients with HER2 strong positive cancers. So this is very exciting because this is in HER2 low expressors, and that makes up about 60% of the breast cancers.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask, because I quite frankly, I don't know a lot about cancer. I mean, I know about the effects it has on families, and I know how awful it is in some of the treatments, but I didn't know how much of a big deal this really was. Because when you describe the type of breast cancer you're saying, it sounds very specific. So in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, that's a small population. It'll be great to that small population, but you're saying that's actually a significant portion of our breast cancer patients.
It actually is, and it's really exciting because in the past we kind of, as oncologists, lumped our patients into quote-unquote HER2-negative breast cancers, even though they were 1 and 2-plus-ish negative HER2-0. But now we're going to have to go back and reclassify our patients as HER2-low so that we have this drug as an option for them in the metastatic setting. It is used in patients who have had other lines of therapy before, at least 1 or 2 lines of chemotherapy. And if you're hormone receptor positive, you had to have received hormonal therapy in the past as well. So this is very exciting because these are heavily pretreated patients and they've had amazing responses in the study compared to, you know, the standard therapy we were offering before.
Dr. Sandy Dunzal is here, who's an oncologist with the Cancer Institute at St. Vincent's Medical Center. And we're talking about this new treatment, which, by the way, just to clarify, Doc, is this already approved? Is this still in trials, the Enhertu treatment?
It is approved.
Okay.
It is approved. It's also approved in a variety of other cancers as well as metastatic HER2 strong positive breast cancer. So it's a drug that we are actively using.
Okay, so that was going to be my next question. Is it something that you guys are using at St. V's?
We're using it, and patients are tolerating it well. the main things of this particular drug are that you just have to watch for patients' respiratory status and cardiac status, which is pretty routine on chemotherapy, and kind of go from there. But okay. It's well tolerated.
What are some of the side effects?
The main ones are sometimes dropping of blood counts, maybe some nausea, but overall well tolerated. We watch the white blood cell counts when anybody's on chemotherapy, and sometimes you have to hold the drug if needed, if it goes too low, and then once it recuperates, you restart. The main things that you wouldn't restart the drug for is if someone had an issue with their breathing or a respiratory compromise, which was a small percentage of patients in the trial.
I'm curious, how long have you been an oncologist?
About 20 years.
Okay. So you know a thing or two about cancer is what I'm getting at. And the reason I asked that question, you know, Dr. Dunzal, I feel like for as long as I can remember, since I was a kid, people have raised money for cancer research, for cancer treatments, and to find a cure. You know, we hear about find a cure. And I have to say now in my 30s, hearing about, first of all, I felt like this week we had two major cancer stories. We had this drug that we're hearing great things about. And then the trial that showed, even though it was only, I think it was like 18 patients having rectal cancer going away completely. It seems like all of a sudden we are starting to see almost, I don't want to say a light at the end of the tunnel, but we're seeing promise when it comes to cancer treatment. And I'm wondering what you think is the driving force for that. Why are we seeing it now? Like what happened in the medical field that we're now starting to find the answers?
I think a light bulb hit that we had to find things that were targeting cancer specifically. I mean, in the past we had general treatments and now we have targeted treatments. I think the universe is going towards targeted therapy. And we have a lot of drug development going on. We're finding a lot of new markers on cancer that we're targeting. And there's a lot of interest in sending gene panels on tumors where we're collecting data on different mutations that are driving, you know, cancer cells. And by collecting that data, I think drug development starts, you know, where you're targeting mutations that you're seeing in cancers and trying to make drugs to hit those more effectively. So I think I can definitely see the progress over the last 20 years and how much we've accomplished in the development of immunotherapies and HER2 drugs. I mean, it's pretty amazing, like you said, where we're able to almost eradicate or stabilize cancer into a chronic disease almost.
And it's interesting, I've had doctors on throughout the last couple of years just talking about COVID, for example, and how quickly we turned around a vaccine. Do you think that that sort of is a platform for turning things around for treatments for other major diseases like cancer?
I think it is definitely a goal that we have. I think that, you know, cancer is a very heterogeneous disease. There are a lot of different types and a lot of different subtypes. And as we were talking today, you know, HER2 low, HER2 high. I mean, so I think that, yes, I think that there are definitely trials in place to look at vaccine therapy, but we definitely have a ways to go with it. But it's hopefully, I think it's because it's such a heterogeneous disease. So something that we can look for in the future, for sure.
Dr. Dunzel, I really appreciate you coming on, oncologist with the Cancer Institute at St. V's. If people want to contact the Cancer Institute, do you guys have a website or a number that people can call?
Absolutely. I mean, we are part of the Hartford Healthcare Network, and we have a panel of oncologists that take care of all different kinds of cancer, including breast cancer. I have a special interest in breast cancer, and we can be found on the web with the Hartford Healthcare site under St. Vincent's Medical Center. And our specific numbers, if that's what you wanted, are for Fairfield and Bridgeport at 203-255-4545. That's for Fairfield. And in Bridgeport, 203-382-2475.
All right. Dr. Dunzel, thank you so much for coming on this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Melissa.
All right. You have a great day. And we thank them for the work that they do over at Hartford Healthcare, St. Vincent's Medical Center, the Cancer Institute, and some breakthrough news about this drug for breast cancer patients. I told you I'd find you some good news. I come through on my promises. So the Connecticut chapter of the Piano Technician Guild, which is a nationwide organization of piano technicians, is offering a community outreach to nonprofits in order to rehabilitate pianos in need. And actually, one of those organizations based right here in Milford will be the first to benefit from this collaboration. Joining us with all the details, welcome back to the show, Gina Bonfietti, who is a piano technician extraordinaire. And the last time she came on, told us all about the details of that piano you found at the green, right on the green in Milford. And it was a real hit that summer. Good morning, Gina. Thank you for coming back on the show. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks so much for having me. And thank you for that fabulous introduction.
Oh,
I love that.
It's no problem. I mean, I have to be honest, you provided me with a lot of that detail. So it's not a problem at all. First of all, tell us about the Milford-based organization that is going to be one of the first in the nation benefiting from this.
Pantaccino's is a theater group. They specialize, and I got to know them through their summer camps for kids. My daughter did a lot of summer camps with them and then went through their teen theater program. And they also have adult actors. And they're based in Milford. They have a warehouse and a practice area in the Milford Mall, which will be there. And then they do their shows out of the Milford Fine Arts, the train station in the center of Milford. So they're very active. They put on productions at the local schools, they do after-school programs, and they do a lot. It's Bert Bernardi and Jimmy, I should know his last name, but they're a great group. And I've been tuning for them, and they had a very small piano. And I said to him, hey, would you guys ever want a grand? And they said, yes. And I had a client who was downsizing. So it seemed like the perfect fit, and I had that piano donated to them. So that's how they acquired the piano that we're going to be working on.
So this is really neat. Tell us a little bit more about how this community outreach to nonprofits is going to work. Like, what do people need to understand about this?
Well, this is our first year, so we're kind of figuring it out as we go. But the intent is to find a nonprofit that does community service work, is active in the community, that has a piano that they love and adore, but maybe need some work, and they just can't afford to have a piano and refurbish it. So what we thought of as the Piano Technicians Guild, we're also a nonprofit. We're highly trained, registered piano technicians that our expertise and our love is pianos. So I thought, wouldn't it be great if we got these two groups together?
Mm-hmm.
We have the expertise and the love, and they have a piano that we can use as an outreach, as an educational service for our members who may not be well-versed in certain types of repairs, an open house for members or people in the community who are thinking, well, maybe I'd like to be a piano technician, but I have no idea what it entails. And then also for people who are just like, hey, I just like to see what's inside a piano. So kind of
it encompasses the two together.
Thank you.
I know the word you're trying, and I know I'm going to botch it as well. So that's why I'm going to pick something else. Gina, I think you're excellent. Gina Bonfietti is here, who's a piano technician. And as I mentioned in the beginning of this, Gina, the last time she came on, told us about this really incredible opportunity. And it was a hit in Milford. I have to be honest, as a Milford resident, there was not one day while that public piano was out there that I didn't see someone sitting there. I didn't see people dancing to the music that was playing. It was one of the coolest community, and it was such a simple thing to do, putting a piano that was refurbished and redone out there and just bringing strangers together. It was one of the neatest things, and I think there's not a lot we can make sense of in this world, but we can make sense of music, and I love that.
Well, I will tell you, I was amazed at how that piano took off. It was just like the perfect Hallmark moment. And it got so much love from the community. I got a call from England saying,
what?
I'd like to do a story. Yeah, from England. This gentleman wanted to do a story on street pianos. It was just amazing, the outreach and how it had so many fingers and how it crawled. Meaning, afterwards, last summer, I did a class on it at a piano technicians conference, the annual national conference. And this summer, there's a lot more street pianos out throughout the United States by people who took the class. And I get emails back saying, hey, how did you do this? And I send them a picture of which I took from the street piano down on the green. And I tell them, this is what I did and this is how it worked. I've gotten a medical analysis of painted pianos in assisted living and how important it is from putting out that class, because someone mentioned it to their local nursing home, and then the nursing home did a study on it. And
oh,
how
my
they
gosh,
found
that's amazing. It's
so cool on how the piano touched so many people.
It does. I'm telling you, music is healing. I know it is for myself. Music is healing. You know, I get asked that all the time. How do you get into your shows without scripts? And how do you go into how do you do your shows every day? And this is my answer every single day. I sit here and I listen to music. I listen to music to center myself. And everybody has different tastes, but it's like to center myself, to focus myself, to align what I'm about to talk about for the next 5 hours. Music is one of my biggest healers. I'm a huge believer in it. And it sounds like you are as well, Gina. And I just want to get back to, it sounds like next week, June 15th, I'm hearing that date. Why is that significant?
Yes. Well, that's the date we're doing it. Our Piano Technicians Guild meetings are the third Wednesday of every month.
Okay.
So that's why we always pick that date. We're going to head to the mall, to Pianocino's warehouse area. I'm guessing we're going to probably have about 25 piano technicians there. And we're going to look at the piano. Do what we do when we go into a new house, look it over and say, this is what this piano needs. I've already talked to Pianocino's and said, what is your issues with this piano? Going to go in their direction as to what is bothering them the most, and then do what we know needs to be done. So I'm envisioning about four or five stations. One gentleman is going to work on making the case look better because he's a master refinisher. One gentleman loves to clean, so he's going to work on the strings and the pin block, and they'll all have helpers. Then we're going to take the insides out of the piano. We're going to separate the keys from what's called the stack, which is the top of the piano, and tighten everything up, glue everything, lubricate everything, do what needs to be done. I take the pedals off and rework those. And there's a possibility we're going to lift the piano up and put a spider or a dolly system on so that they can move the piano throughout the warehouse without being on tiny, tiny little wheels.
Oh, how cool.
So we're going to do this in 5 hours. or less. And then our technical, we have a technical every month where we learn new tricks and tips. And typically we have people, we've had people from Washington State, Georgia, from all over the country that come in and teach us their techniques and how they do it. So, but this time we're going to teach our own class and say, okay, people, this is what we did. This is what worked. This is how long it took. This is what, if we had a better budget or if the client wanted to put new parts on, we could have done this.
That's really neat.
It's going to be a great learning experience for our technicians, but it's also going to be great for pianocinos because this work would have cost them thousands.
I'm sure.
And we're just going to help them out.
I think that's amazing. Now, Gina, obviously you guys are pretty set for this upcoming event, but in future, if you have technicians who are interested or you have people who are interested in learning a little bit about the work that you do, is there a way they could reach out?
Sure. They can reach out to me, but I'm going to give you some websites that will get them information quicker.
Go for it.
If you want to become a piano technician or if you want to find a piano technician, maybe you're not in Connecticut, you can go to www.ptg.org. That's the Piano Technician Guild's main website. That's for all over the country. You can find a piano technician anywhere. You can learn how to become a piano technician. There's a spot for teachers. So we have so many independent teachers out there that may not have a community that can go there and find some information. There's coloring pages. There's a lot of information on that homepage.
Right.
Then if you're looking in Connecticut, our website is ctptg.org. So just CT in front of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there you'll find the Connecticut members of the Piano Technicians Guild, a little information about what we do. And if some nonprofit is interested in having their piano be considered for next year's project, they can reach out to one of the piano technicians on that list or to myself and say, you know, I'm interested in having our piano looked at. And then, of course, we will have some questions for them.
And you'll go from there, basically. Gina, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I thank you so much for what you're doing in the community. And I look forward to seeing what projects lie ahead. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Melissa. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too, Gina. Appreciate you coming on.